Chapter 20. The ground trembled as the earthquake resonated across the desolate plains, and there was a moment when Cygnus Prime seemed to hold its breath. Then, on spars of nuclear fire that burned rock and sand to vapor, the gigantic hulk of the Red Tear began to rise. Slowly at first, sloughing off broken shards of metal and sheaves of falling sand deposited by the mournful winds, the battle barge pulled free of the earth that held it. Fighting gravity every meter of the way, the ship seemed to defy reason as it lifted into the dull air. The monolithic, city-sized craft resisted the planet's attempts to hold it where it had fallen. This was the last battle that would be fought in the Cygnus Cluster, the final match between the might of the Blood Angels and the wastelands made from human misery and warp sorcery. The Ninth Legion would win it as they had those before. To fail would be to dispute the will of the Angel. On Cygnus Prime, on Holst, and in orbit, in every place where their warriors had set foot, their Primarch had commanded that his sons excise all evidence that the Legion had ever come to this place. Over the days that passed after the final charge on the Cathedral of the Mark, an army of servitors and wardens had gathered up every Battle Brother's corpse, every broken vehicle, every torn piece of armour or blunted sword. The work was almost complete, but for the spent casings of a few bolt shells lying lost and buried in the sands, but little more. Sanguinius had ordered it so. The Blood Angels would leave nothing behind in this blighted, murdered place, not their ships, not their relics, and not their precious dead. Wounded but still imperious, the Red Tear lifted faster and faster as its mighty engines pressed it into the sky. The warship's damage was great. Deep within her internal spaces, repairs were still underway. But like the Blood Angels, she had defied the odds and the plans of a deceitful enemy to ascend again. The white glow of the dwarf sun, Cygnus Beta, high overhead through the pall of airborne dust, shone down and was briefly eclipsed by the Red Tear's silhouette. The shadow it cast in mirror of the Legion's sigil passed over the battlefield and away. Ralderon watched the mighty barge recede into the ranges of the Cygnusi sky. He and all the other captains gathered in the tumble-down ruins, gazing up in salute to see it go. They were the last Blood Angels on planet anywhere in the system. A short distance away, a flight of stormbirds were waiting to take them from this disfigured wilderness. Once they turned their back on Cygnus Prime, they would never return. No one would return. It had already been etched into the Legion's Book of Hours by the Primarch's own hand. The Blood Angels would not build a monument or grave marker here, as they had on other planets where such bloodshed had occurred. The hundreds upon hundreds of the dead would be taken home to Baal to be buried on the slopes of Mount Seraph, the injured ships to Stardox for repair and rearmament. Warning buoys and automated beacons were being deployed all about the star system's perimeter, there to turn back any ships that might come this way in the years ahead. The Cygnus Cluster had been declared Morti Perpetua, forever dead. It would be left lifeless and rotting until its suns burned cold, with nothing but the echoes of those who perished there to bear witness. Ralderon turned away from the burned sky and the blood-stained desert, his gaze crossing the faces of his comrades. He saw Galen and Furio, Carminus and Ascalon, each legionary outwardly at attention in their master's presence, but each under some aspect of the same brooding shadow that lay across the entire legion. In the aftermath of the bloodbath at the cathedral, when the witchery of the rage fire had finally been broken, the character of the Blood Angels had turned to morose mien and the bitter sting of misery. Slowly, like men emerging into day from decades of life in a lightless dungeon, they had come to understand that this particular nightmare had passed. Some even affected brighter manner and hopeful mood, but the first captain could not help but wonder how much of that was forced. It was only Amit whose conduct had grown darker. Even now he lurked at the edges of the group, engaging no one, his eyes hooded and lost in his own thoughts. Ralderon frowned. The Legion had been wounded in this place, a cut that had pressed to their very core. Like their Primarch, the Blood Angels had been blindsided by those they called kin. The distant perfidy of Warmaster Horus and the closer lies of the Word-Bearers had brought them to the brink of the abyss. "We have been shown the worst of ourselves," he thought, "and it is a sobering truth to behold." Time would tell if they would heal this wound, or if it would fester within them for eternity. For now, the captain remembered Sanguinius's words in the Bone Temple. "We are tested, and we do not break." He stepped aside briefly to allow a servitor to grind past him, ambling towards the Stormbirds. The machine slave was one of a handful that had accompanied the battle captains to this place. The servitors bore the mechanisms for a tactical cyclonic device, which now sat in the middle of the ruins. A stubby bollard of plasteel, it contained a warhead of incredible destructive power. The weapon had been programmed to detonate when the assembled officers reached a safe distance. The resultant blast it would create would be enough to rip a massive chasm in Cygnus Prime's surface and eradicate all trace of the Cathedral of the Mark forever. Sanguinius considered the weapon, then turned to face them. "Our enemy has made a grave error, my sons. He did not kill us all when the chance was open to him." The angel's expression was grim. "And now we will exact the blood cost for that mistake. The cost for the lives of your battle brothers lost in this madness. For the innocents sacrificed to draw us here." Fury glittered in his eyes. "The cost of betrayal and treachery." The Primarch glanced at Ascalon, and the guard commander took his cue to offer up a nugget of information. "Our ships have conducted a search for the Dark Page, but the traitor vessel has eluded us. We can only assume that the Word-Bearers have fled the system and made space for the warp. I imagine they carry word of their failure back to..." He faltered suddenly, stumbling over the words. "Horus," intoned the angel. "You may say my wayward brother's name, Ascalon. We will all be called to speak it when the moment comes that he must be named arch-traitor." Ralderon knew that his master was in pain with every breath he was taking, although he gave no sign of it. The crippling injury he had suffered on the battlefield still had to heal. A lesser being would never have walked again without sacrificing their broken limbs for augmetic replacements. Sanguinius mastered that pain, holding it where none could see. But not so the other pain, the agony of his soul. That he could not keep from the warriors of his inner circle, the legionaries who knew the angel best. Ralderon saw it in his eyes, heard it in his words. The War Master had awakened at first a great sorrow in his angelic brother, but now that had burned down and been rebuilt as a great and powerful hatred. The Primarch's sword slid from its scabbard, and Sanguinius placed his bare hand upon it, drawing blood. "I swear that the day will dawn when I face Horus and put him to the question, and to the blade. There is no doubt in my mind that my brother has turned away from the rightful rule of the Emperor and the banner of Terra's glory. He has united with monsters to prosecute his rebellion. I do not know why, but that shall not stay our hands. It may be madness, the influence of the alien, or the corrosion of his heart. But I will learn that truth when I meet him face to face." He gripped the sword with fierce intensity. "And then I will kill him for his treason." As a mutter of grave assent passed through the assembled group, Ralderon felt compelled to speak. "My lord, if the sons of Horus and the Word-Bearers have united against the rest of the Imperium, then we face a battle like no other in human history." Sanguinius nodded. "It is much worse than you think, my friend. This day, Ascalon brought me news of a communication deciphered by one of our few surviving astropaths." Ralderon listened intently. While the arcane veil had been in place, no astropathic signals had been able to reach the Blood Angel's flotilla. It seemed that while they had been locked in their peculiar prison, time had stuttered in a freakish pattern, and events had moved on around them. This new war, it seemed, was not confined to the Cygnus Cluster or the Blood Angels. The Primarch announced that the message bore the seal of Rogel Dorn, the Imperial Fist himself. A cheer went up. Many feared that traps, similar to the one that had ensnared the Ninth Legion, had been sprung upon other steadfast sons of the Imperium, and the word of Dorne's well-being was met with relief. "Aye, it is well he lives," said Sanguinius, his mood unchanged, foreboding. "But his word came with greater import. Dorne marshals the defences of Terror, but warns of the rot of betrayal spread wide. The Emperor's children, word-bearers, night-lords, Alpha Legion, the Iron Warriors, World-Eaters, and the Death Guard, all of them, now march to the War Master's drums." A shocked silence fell. Raldron heard the rumble of his blood in his veins, felt his breath catch in his throat. If any other but the Primarch had said those words, he would have decried them on the spot. The First Captain saw his battle brothers struggling to process this information. It was a dizzying, horrific revelation. The Legiones Astartes, sundered by lies. A civil war ignited between colossal armies of gene-forged fighters which could only end in fires of conflict burning across the galaxy. And this was only the beginning of it. Dorne's blunt, matter-of-fact message had carried not only word of disloyalty, but also of death. The Salamanders, Raven Guard, and Iron Hands had taken the brunt of the betrayal, their forces smashed. Mars was ablaze in factional warfare. The fates and the fealty of the White Scars, Ultramarines, Dark Angels, Thousand Suns, and Space Wolves were unknown. Sanguinius's voice revealed nothing but hard, fiery anger as he spoke of his brother, Ferus Manus, reportedly slain by Fulgrim himself, and of Great Vulcan, also presumed dead. "We have broken out of this hellish oubliette and found ourselves in a different universe from the one we left. Everything has changed." He placed a hand over the ruby heart on his chest plate, marking a line of blood upon it. "Even us." Each warrior knew what he meant. The red thirst had come upon them all and staggered them with its power. Furio spoke the words they all felt. "What took place here can never be allowed to happen again." "But it will," said Sanguinius. "And when that fury comes once more, know this. The Blood Angels will be ready. The flaw in us is not something that can be dismissed or defeated with ease. It is the inner enemy, the reflection of the conflict without." The burning fury in his manner shifted, and Sanguinius walked among them, giving each warrior a nod or a touch of his hand upon their shoulder. "Aye, it is part of what we are, our gift and our curse, and we will master it if we are to win this war, the war of brothers against brothers, for the Imperium and for the future."
"For the Imperium!"
The call left Raldron's lips, and his battle brothers carried it high, drawing their swords and raising them in salute. The angel gave a nod.
"We take our leave of this place, my sons. Turn from it, and guide your eyes to the battles ahead. With these steps, our legion embarks upon its greatest challenge."
They filed back to their ships, and none of them glanced over their shoulders to see what they left behind. A glitter of gold and red by his boot caught Raldoron's eye, and he stopped, plucking an ornate honour sigil in the shape of a teardrop from the sand. The decoration was fine, with etched text. He recognised it as belonging to a legionary of Squad Vitronus, and he resolved to return it to its owner's side. When he looked up, the angel was there. "Ral," he began, "when we reach the flagship, I want you to send word to my brother. Tell Dorne what we fought here, if you can find the words. Tell him that the Blood Angels are on their way to Terra with all possible speed." At his Primarch's side, the Sanguinary Guard Commander Ascalon offered a thought.
"That may be easier said than done, Lord. The navigators aboard the ships at the edge of the system are reporting a strange confusion in the void."
"What do you mean?" said Raldron. "Something to do with that veil effect?"
Ascalon shook his head.
"No, this is different." He frowned. "The navigators spoke of a dislocation
of the Imperial Astronomicon. The eternal light of the great beacon on Terra is not where it should be.
Raldron grimaced.
More warp spawn trickery.
Perhaps, considered the Primarch, we must be cautious. We'll put the fleet into a distributed pattern and have the navigators sound for the strongest psychic signal. After what we have encountered here, the Legion must be prepared for any eventuality. They approached one of the Stormbirds, and the crew saluted as the Angel climbed aboard. Raldron followed Ascalon and Sanguinary Guards, the drop ramp rising behind him. He saw the Primarch glance at his guard commander.
The full casualty reports have yet to be brought to me. I am saddened to consider Captain Redknife's absence from our gathering. What fate befell his wolves?
Raldron's report to Ascalon about finding steel had been thorough and unflinching in its estimation of how the rune priest had perished. The captain waited for Ascalon to cast a look in his direction, but he never did.
They died with honour, my lord, replied the commander.
With a crash of engines, the Stormbirds lifted off from the desert and blasted upwards at hypersonic speeds. They moved too fast for the cyclonic shockwave to reach them, but the first captain caught a flash of brilliant white from the corner of his eye, reflected from a viewport. He turned away. The central atrium of the Red Tier had been a place of devotional artworks and battle trophies to laud the warship's accolades, but after Cygnus it had changed as much as the Legion. Many of the halls and corridors of the battle barge had been sealed off after the damage the ship had suffered, compartments and chambers repurposed for more immediate needs. The changes to the atrium had come without order, though. It had been done through silent understanding. At the foot of a great frieze showing the Angel and his golden guards, brothers began a makeshift memorial for the lost. Small items, such as sigils or honor chains, personal chalices, even broken blades, formed a tapestry across the far wall. Rolls of digital parchment were fixed to the marble, and upon them were names written in dozens of different hands. This would be the way they would remember until the ceremony of mourning could be formalized. Sergeant Cassiel reached out and traced Maros's name with his finger, his brow furrowing.
He is dead, then?
A hollowness moved through the air around him, and Cassiel knew it was the woman called Tillian. She came to stand beside him, reading the parchment. The sergeant considered her. At first, when they departed for the strike mission against the cathedral, he had thought of Niobe as a liability. She would slow them down, reduce their reaction times, and make the attack much more difficult. He had little regard for the common imperial citizenry. But she had surprised him with her fortitude. This woman, who was not even a soldier, had walked with them into a place filled with terrors undreamed of by even the most seasoned veterans. She had not faltered. Cassiel saw a cast in Niobe's eye that seemed familiar, the same gaze he had seen in himself, in his kinsman, eyes that had gazed upon a kind of hell. He wasn't certain if she was crying. The emotions of unenhanced humans were hard for him to gauge. She did not know the full detail of the apothecary sacrifice, nor his ultimate fate. If truth were told, neither did Cassiel. Beaten, Tillian Niobe had lain insensate on the floor of the Bone Temple while Maros had given his life. Or had he? Cassiel knew death, and that was not what had claimed his brother.
He will live on, offered the sergeant. His gene seed was recovered from the field of battle. It will become the genesis of future generations of blood angels. Meros's bravery will be remembered.
Is that all that is left of him?
Cassiel didn't understand the question.
What of his spirit?
I have no knowledge of such things, he replied after a moment.
Niobe clasped a small leather-bound book in her hand. It was careworn and scuffed, and he had not seen it before.
What is that?
She coloured slightly, clutching it tighter.
It belonged to Dortmund. I found it on his...
Niobe swallowed.
I found it, she concluded.
Cassiel had seen the remains of the civilian survivors, butchered by the Harriers and Furies. They had died because their presence had been revealed by Niobe's departure, and it had not been swift for them. She opened the book, and he saw pages of tiny red text in the local dialect of Gothic.
There is some comfort in it, she explained.
Cassiel was about to leave, but an odd impulse came to him. He glanced at the parchment once again, then to the book.
Read some of it to me, he said.
The drill hall was empty when Raldron arrived, in hopes of finding the peace of meditation in the wide open chamber. Such tranquility no longer came easily to him. When the sound of a fist, ringing against the adamantium supports, broke his focus, he did not begrudge it. The first captain rose from where he knelt and turned. Without waiting for his permission, a hooded figure pushed past him into the chamber.
Amit!
No other warrior of the Legion would be so bold. The captain of the fifth pulled back his hood and fixed his brother with a brooding, surly gaze.
I thought you returned to the Victus, Raldoron went on. For a time, Amit said wearily.
He opened his robes, and there in his hand was the naked length of his battle sword, the barbed, flaying blade that had earned the captain the name Flesh Tearer. He offered it like a trophy.
Take this from me. I no longer deserve it, nor my rank and status. I have dishonored our legion. The wolves!
His words faded. Raldron's blood ran cold as a missing piece fell into place in his thoughts.
It was you. Your legionaries. You were responsible for the deaths of Red Knife Squad. Take it!
Amit shouted.
I must atone for what was done. I and my warriors have betrayed our Emperor. We murdered our allies. We lost control. The blood.
His voice broke in a gasp of sorrow and anger.
It blinded me. I saw only enemies to be killed.
How could you do this? Raldron wanted to shout the question, but he knew the answer. He had felt the power of the rage fire, barely been able to resist it himself, even with a pariah woman at close hand. Amit and his legionaries had been granted no such protection. The fury in them, so close to the surface already, had smothered their reason.
I will take responsibility for what has been done, said Amit. I forfeit my life, my rank, and my honour. You will do none of that.
Ascalon emerged from the shadows across the chamber, his armour shimmering in the light of the electro candles.
It will not be permitted. Following me?
Amit snapped.
You knew, said Raldron, eyeing the guard commander. When I confided to you about Yonos Steel, you knew then.
Ascalon gave a curt nod.
The bodies of Red Knife's warriors were recovered by High Warden Berus. He understood the import of how they had met their end as well as I did. I took steps.
Confusion crossed Amit's features.
What does he mean? He kept the truth of your error from the angel.
Amit rounded on Ascalon, brandishing his sword.
You had no right.
The warrior in gold surged forward and snatched at the tip of the blade, gripping it in his fingers.
I have every right, he snarled. I am master of the Sanguinary Guard, and it is my duty to protect the Primarch in all things. You lied, spat Raldron, to Sanguinius himself. I only kept a single truth for the sake of the Master and the Legion.
He pushed the blade away.
I did it to protect us.
Ascalon's moment of temper ebbed, and he became cool and controlled once more.
And you will do the same, my brothers.
No,
Amit shook his head fiercely.
Yes, insisted Ascalon, or you will damn us to greater division and bloodshed.
He studied them both.
If Sanguinius knew how Red Knife's wolves had died, what would he do? In his noble purity, he would never conscience keeping that from Leman Russ. He would bear the blame himself, and what would be the result? A new schism between two legions in a time when unity must be paramount. We are entering a civil war. Aye, the Space Wolves may never stand with the War Master's rebellion, but still, they must not be given cause to distrust the Blood Angels.
He shot a cold look at Amit.
We cannot afford to assuage your guilt over actions committed while you are not in your right mind. Many horrors were unleashed upon us at Cygnus. Yours is only one, Captain.
He turned to Raldron, a flash of regret in his eye.
You both know I am right. The point is well made, said Raldron, the words ashes in his mouth.
He hated the mendacity of it, but while callous, Ascalon's logic was sound.
"You command me to silence," growled Amit. "But what will quiet the remorse in my heart? The burden you must carry is a small price to pay," said Ascalon.
Zuriel's glaive in carmine whispered from its scabbard as Carno approached the Sanctorum, the sword dropping across his path.
"You are not summoned, brother," said the Sanguinary Guard sergeant. "This day he speaks to no one."
Carno grimaced, much of it from the bite of his healing wounds, but more from a deeper pain, not so easy to banish.
"Perhaps the angel would change his mind, if he knows I have come to him."
Zuriel's face shifted, and there was guilt there. It had not been said aloud, but Carno knew that at the heights of the brutal frenzy that had overtaken the Blood Angels, even the Sanguinary Guard had succumbed. None could blame them, but the warriors in gold had left their posts at the Primarch's side to fall into the grip of the bloodthirst. Each of Ascalon's legionaries bore the shame of that dereliction of duty, and Carno wondered how they would pay for it. Carno had been the only one who stayed. What Zuriel would think of him because of that he could not guess at. For his part, Carno's status was in flux. He had been party to the breaking of an imperial edict, and while some spoke of reinstating the Librarius Division, others called for the harshest censure. All of the Blood Angels were weary, even if they hid it well. It had been days since the Grand Flotilla had left the Cygnus Cluster and lit for the Core Worlds. Entry into the warp had not been easy. Ethereal hyperstorms awaited them in the extra-dimensional realm, fogging their course and battering at the Geller fields protecting their ships. There were suggestions that the warp itself had been agitated into frenzy by the incursions of the demon creatures. Whatever the cause, it made hard going for the fleet elements. Then there was the matter of the Astronomicon. The guiding beacon, the psychic lighthouse on Terabit, stood as the single fixed point in the otherwise malleable landscape of warp space, had become indistinct. A spatial disturbance of magnitudes not recorded since the Age of Strife rippled in the void, robbing the navigators of their certainty. Now the fleet struggled on through the screaming abyss, searching for the strongest psychic glimmer, in vain hopes of pushing through to the throne world. The sergeant was about to shake his head and dismiss the adjutant more forcefully, but then a subtle indication icon on the vambrace of Zuriel's armour blinked red. His manner immediately changed, and the glaive returned to its sheath.
"You may enter."
Carno glanced around, wondering if Sanguinius had been monitoring the antechamber through some hidden scrying device. Inside, the Angel's Chamber of Solace showed some signs of damage and minor disarray, but it seemed insignificant. The Primarch was in the centre of the room, seated upon a curial chair of gunmetal and red velvet. He was without any iteration of his great armour. Along the far walls there were hemispheric capsules with crystal flex panels revealing his battle plate contained within. Yet without the gold, the angel did not seem diminished. Rather, it was as if he had been released. His wings nestled above his back. Sanguinius wore ordinary robes of a cut that was identical to those of a first-rank neophyte. They bore no marks of status beyond the legion sigil and a thick black mourning band that circled the sleeve about his bicep. A tall, spindly servitor hunched over the Primarch, a spider of delicate plasteel fingers tracing across his face. Carno smelled ink and blood. "Come," said the angel, without turning. He raised a hand and beckoned Carno closer. "What ails you, my son?" As he opened his mouth to speak, Carno felt a weight descend upon his shoulders.
"Master, I am deeply troubled. Each time I close my eyes, I see again what ranges out before us. Futures. Possibilities."
His throat was arid, and he swallowed.
"Death. Those things were not meant for you," said the angel. "I am sorry you had to witness them."
Carno came to stand at attention in front of the Primarch, pausing to give a low bow. There he could see that the servitor was at work at Sanguinius's cheek, moving tiny probes over the surface of his skin. Dots of bright laser light flashed at the mechanical fingertips. He looked away.
"Those visions, those events,
Is that what you see, my lord, in your dreams? The deaths of empire and emperor? Of eternal war?
It was a long moment before the angel answered. I dream of many things, Kano. I dreamed of you years before you became known to me. Meros, I saw him too. I saw you both in your acts of valor, saving my life, saving our legion. But only now do I realize the meaning I had glimpsed in those brief moments. He grasped a corner of his robe and held it up, running his finger over the surface of the cloth. This is time, my son, a fabric of possibilities crossing and recrossing one another. But it is the weave that makes the shape of it, not the threads. What may appear to be a seam of importance leads nowhere. And what is dismissed? He trailed off. I can no more predict our tomorrows than I can command the motion of the stars. For an instant, Sanguinius's gaze turned inwards, remembering something long past. As much is unseen to me as is seen. Know that, Kano. What you shared with me is only the skein of the potential, and even in the act of observing it, you altered its path. We will know the future when it is upon us, and not before. Despite himself, Kano gave a rueful smile. That is little comfort, my lord. I know, said Sanguinius. Believe me, I know. You will find a kind of peace eventually, but when you came into the mindscape, you burned something of yourself to reach me. You will never have it back, just as Icarnus and the other librarians will never live again but in our memories. He reached for a red grail at his side and raised it in salute. I continue to be honored by my legion's dedication. You have my gratitude. As the angel took a sip, the servitor released a sigh and retreated, the spindly lengths of its arms folding back into its chest. There, upon Sanguinius's face, a single black teardrop had been permanently tattooed into his cheek. The ebon mark marred the flawless form of his features, but he wore it proudly. So none will forget, he explained, and offered the grail to Kano. He took it, surprised by the gesture. It held a fine, rich red wine, and the taste of it reminded him of Baal. The flavor kindled a moment of memory, another rich taste upon his lips, another thirst for something else. The Primarch watched him and gave a nod. The curse is revealed. I had hoped it would never be so, and in my hubris I tried to hide it. Horus used that against me. So many trusts he broke. Now every blood angel knows the burn of the red thirst, the shadow on their spirit. And the worst of it is, a greater darkness lies beneath that impulse. I will do everything in my power to hold that future at bay. Sanguinius rose and walked to the tall windows across the sanctum. There was the slightest stiffness in his gait, the only outward sign of the near crippling injuries he had suffered on Cygnus Prime. Glimpsed behind heavy curtains of crimson, beyond the armored portal, the wild colors and non-space of the immaterium surged and churned. The angel pushed a curtain aside to stare into the face of the warp. But there are creatures I am sure of, offered the Primarch. The creature Kabanda who struck me down. We will have a reckoning. And there will come a greater battle beyond that, with a War Master himself. Bitterness filled his words. I made a vow, Kano. I will see it to its bloody ending. The angel turned away from the window, and incarnadine light haloed his folded wings. There may be a day, and sooner than we might wish, when my sons, will have to go on without me. Kano found himself shaking his head.
No, my lord, you are eternal. No being is eternal, came the reply, not even my father.
Slowly a proud smile crossed the Primarch's lips.
You and Icarnus and your fellows, Meros, every single one of you, prove that the Blood Angels have the strength and the nobility to face any challenge, no matter how terrible. You did all this without me at your side.
The red grail fell from Kano's nerveless fingers, thudding to the deck as he realized what he was hearing. Sanguinius's gaze was strong and steady.
Swear this to me, Brother Kano. You will speak to no one of what we shared in those visions.
It seemed like an eternity before he could answer. On my oath, I swear it. The words had barely left his lips before the Red Tear's deck lurched beneath his boots, and the nightmare vista of warp space flashed brilliant white. Carno felt the sickly rush in the pit of his thoughts that always came with a translation from the Immaterium. He looked up, and through the portal saw unfamiliar stars patterned across the blackness of space, and what might have been starships. The angel turned, and his eyes hardened. "This isn't right!" Carno whirled as the chamber doors crashed open, and Zuriel entered at a run, his brothers Mendrion and Halcrin a few steps behind. Belatedly, alert toxins began to sound.
"Master?" said Zuriel.
Sanguinius waved him away and strode to a hololithic display in the centre of the chamber.
"Command," he snapped. "Priority."
Immediately, an image swam into definition, and Carno made out a three-dimensional representation of part of the Red Tears Bridge. A figure hove into view. Captain Carminus of the Third Company, the officer chosen by the Primarch to take the temporary office of Fleetmaster after Admiral Ducade's suicide. Carminus saluted, and did not wait to be asked the obvious question.
"The navigators, my lord. They fell into some kind of fugue state a few moments ago. We tried to awaken them, but they would only speak of a safe harbour. Then suddenly they executed a warp translation here."
Halcrin was at the great windows.
"This is not the Sol system. The stars are all wrong."
He pointed up and to starboard, where a thick belt of light, the curve of a galactic spiral arm, was clearly visible.
"Initial estimates show we are still within the Ultima Segmentum," said Carminus. "The cogitators are running exact constellation matches now, but it appears we have been displaced." "Hundreds of light years off course," said the Primarch. "We must assume the worst. Send word to all ships, all squadrons. Take us to battle stations, Sacris. Anything that does not fly our colours is to be considered dangerous."
Carminus saluted, and turned from the visual pickup to relay the command.
"How did we come to be here?" said Carno, struggling to process it. "We should be at the gates of Terra." "Warp travel has never been an exact science," muttered Zuriel. "But if our navigators were somehow corrupted by the enemy without our knowledge, they may have delivered us to the traitors."
Sanguinius shook his head. "No, this is something different. I can feel it. The storms, the fading of the signal from the Astronomicon. It's all connected." He fell silent, musing.
"I told the navigators to strike for the strongest telepathic signal."
The angel glanced at Carno.
"What if that was not my father's beacon on Terra?" "How can any light be greater than the Emperor's?"
insisted Mendrion. The Primarch was grim-faced.
"I do not know."
Carminus reappeared in the hololith.
"Lord Primarch, fleet pickets are reporting the approach of a skirmish line of unidentified starships."
He read the data off a slate in his hand.
"Imperial silhouettes, heavy cruisers, frigates, destroyers. They are running with void shields raised and gun ports open." "A blockade force patrolling the approaches," offered Zuriel.
Halcrin raised his arm and pointed.
"I think I see them. Port quarter high." "Prepare to fire," ordered the angel. "Warning shots first. If they do not stand down, order gunners to target for motion kills."
He turned from the hololith and went to the portal, Carno trailing behind him. The interception force approached at high velocity, the dots of light swiftly gaining definition. Even from such a great distance, Carno's enhanced eyesight brought him the shape of the vessels. He saw the distinctive plough-like bow blade common to Imperial warships, and noted that many of the craft had the patched, rough-edged look of veterans. This was no flight of hangar queens, but battle-hardened craft, not long off the front lines. At the leading edge of the group, the hulls were the common silver-grey of the Imperial Army's naval battalions, but the larger ships had a different livery. A bright cobalt blue, the shade of an evening sky, trimmed with flawless white and shining gold. At his shoulder, Zuriel saw the same.
"Can it be?"
"My lord," Carminus called from the hololith relay, "we are receiving a signal."
The captain hesitated, uncertain of what he was about to say.
"I believe it is for your attention."
The flickering hologram broke apart into a wash of shimmering static, changing and reforming. It became a powerful figure, a new face, a strong and stern visage of aquiline proportions, a towering warrior whose presence, even diminished by distance and the attenuation of the projection, was still a match for that of the angel.
"Robut!"
Carno heard the surprise in his Primarch's voice.
"Brother!"
The master of the 13th Legion smiled, gratitude in his gaze.
"Well met, Sanguinius. I welcome you to Ultramar and the 500 worlds."
He nodded to himself as if acknowledging a truth now revealed.
"It is good that you are here. Now we can begin."